was sober on my first day of sobriety here, so, you know, that's a good first. When I came here, I was like, I won't drink for like 30 days, you know, and I came here and someone was like, why don't you try 90? And I was like, all right, I'll try 90. And I'm still here, so there you go. I'll try and keep the... Let me start the timer. I'll try and keep the part before I got sober short, because there's not that much there anyway. I was born in Long Island. I grew up to two non-alcoholic parents. They were workaholics, though. My mom worked like 100 hours a week, and my dad, like, you know, never really stopped. Part of that has to do with his upbringing. One of those American dream stories. So he, you know, slept on subways and made whatever, $60 to millions and whatever. So I grew up with privilege, which was cool in some ways. I would say that my disease started around when I was like 10. I started to notice some things. My first addiction was food. I remember going like ham on some California Pizza Kitchen at like 9 years old and feeling amazing, by the way. Like, I ate like so much. It was crazy. And I was really skinny before that, so there you go. Then it was like video games. Did a whole lot of that. World of Warcraft, pretty much anything that you could abuse, I abused. Anyway, I always felt different, something that I'm sure none of you can relate to at all. I'm Sikh, and there was this thing that happened, 9/11, and there was a lot of like hate crimes happening against Sikhs. I was 10 at the time, and I was very afraid, you know? I was afraid of all of you white people, and I was afraid of... but then afterwards, I also was very much disenfranchised from the Sikh community because of some family disputes. I wasn't allowed back to like this camp that I would go to every summer. So I felt very much like alienated from both, and that's what it was. And so like the rest of my life was kind of decided by that. It's a great day when I go to a meeting and don't count the number of non-white people at the meeting. That's a good day for like the don't compare identify deal, you know. But it's still obviously a problem, and I'm afraid of all of you. So anyway, what was amazing partially about coming into the rooms was I think that, you know, I realized that everyone here has felt different very much from an early age and felt very alienated. Felt like something was wrong with them. And there was. There was a lot of self-abuse in my childhood. And, you know, that kind of deal. I didn't take my first drink or drug until I was 16 or 15. I smoked weed at the bottom of a sump in Long Island, and it didn't work, and the next time it definitely did. And then my first drink was like a month or 2 weeks later of Old English and during a game of Kings. And I had, after the bottle was done, I got like spontaneously taken back to my house for like some family party, and I felt like on top of the world. Like, I felt like I was the coolest kid. I was like skating around in socks, obviously, on like the tile floors, and just was like, I got this shit down. Felt great. Felt like CPK. Felt better than CPK, you know? And the funny thing is, the summer before that, I was very much anti-drug. I was like, why would you do drugs or alcohol? What the fuck is wrong with you? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And like, literally a month later, 2 months later, I was, you know, getting drunk and high. First, like, every other weekend, then every weekend, then, you know, every day. So I went to a really good school in New Hampshire where Bill Wilson also went. And there's a lot of frattiness going on there. And, my first year, I did drink a lot. The party nights there were Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. And then Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday, you could also do whatever you wanted to. But Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday were like the, if you have FOMO, like, you have to go. And I definitely did, obviously, as like a 17-year-old who, you know, very much wanted, was like, this is my chance to feel a sense of belonging. I got lucky, though, in that tours, as things started to get more drinking heavy, I got like accidentally roofied, basically. I drank some drink that was meant for some girl and, you know, got... Anyway, point is, I like had a terrible experience where I woke up having done like some property damage, some other weird shit, and was like, oh, I won't drink. And I found this frat that like had just gotten like a free pound of weed, and you know, we would just like smoke weed nonstop. And then I joined that frat, then I quit that frat. anyway, long story short, I didn't really think I had a problem with drinking, though. When I came into the rooms. I should say this. I had two bottoms in my life. I would say two real severe emotional and spiritual bottoms, which one was in sophomore summer of college, which at my school was like this whole everyone loves each other kind of deal. And I felt very alienated, obviously, as I tend to do. It's actually how I feel usually when I come to this meeting as well, by the way. Anyway, the second one was the year after I graduated college. Both of them were, you know, moments where I was, I set a date on when I would kill myself if nothing changed. Nothing did change, but then instead of killing myself, I was like, I'm gonna make a reason to live, I think is how I ended up doing it. I started a magazine in college, which did pretty well until obviously, like, then I found a new thing, after my summer after my first year, I started a fashion brand, which did okay, I guess, but not really. So I created these reasons for living, thinking that this was the problem. The problem was, you know, I wasn't doing enough. I sort of went with like my parents' style of workaholism, and it didn't work, obviously. What woke me up and got me sober, like I had spent about a year and a half, 2 years, 3 years maybe, of almost every day being like, I need to stop tomorrow, you know. And I thought the problem was weed, and a lot of the problem was weed, absolutely. I mean, I smoked like nonstop every day. I would smoke like half an eighth to an eighth every day. It was pretty insane while running a company / not really showing up to it. All these warning signs of like, if I get high in the morning, I for some reason have to keep getting high for the rest of the day, kind of warning signs that people are, that apparently isn't normal. And when I didn't have weed, I remember doing this hiatus for a week. You know, I got like blackout drunk every night, which I thought was great because like, oh, I got laid or whatever the fuck happened, even though it was horrible. I thought it was great because I was like, this is more functional. But then I was like, this is a problem. I think I should probably just get high again. But it continued to be the story. You know, I would pull out of geographics or like mini geographics. For work, I had to travel a lot. So I'd be in China, in these kind of like towns in China that you couldn't really get weed in. I hear there are places in China you can get weed in. I wasn't in those places. But I would like, you know, get drunk and do things that weren't like that much my character, you know, as like someone who identified himself as like this feminist dude, found myself kind of like making out with a Chinese like stripper kind of shit, you know, that didn't even speak English kind of crap, you know, and then like looking at myself being like, what the fuck was that, you know, like, what about everything you said about yourself, what about everything you actually believe in? Anyway, it was just more of that. I got really into acid and psychedelics. I told myself I would never do that because I thought something was wrong with me psychologically, and so I was like, if I do this, my clear like manic depressiveness or something will become a real problem. And then I got like blackout drunk one night when I was like, this is how I should write this paper. I drank like this Magnum bottle of wine and then woke, I like blacked in, tripping obviously, and then proceeded to do it like every week for like the next few months. So long story short, what happened was an employee of mine quit, and not because of me, but because she got a way better job somewhere else. And I was like, she was pretty much single-handedly keeping up the company. And I was just like, saw myself heading back towards that place, that bottom that I had hit before. And when I was there, there usually was no way out, you know? And I had spent most of the mornings and days before I got sober the past year, you know, wanting to die, hating myself, that spiritual bankruptcy and emotional bankruptcy people talk about, I definitely relate to. And so I messaged a friend of mine who was like ex-heroin addict or whatever. And I was like, yo, what should I do? Should I like go to NA or what should I do? And he was like, don't go to NA, you'll get robbed. And I was like, okay. I won't go to NA. I don't even, that's not true, I think, by the way. I hear it. But it, I mean, I haven't gone to an NA meeting, so I don't know if that, what that means. but he was like, go to AA. The good, best thing about my sobriety, I think, was that I didn't know shit about AA. That was the best thing. And maybe I'd seen it in movies, but I knew zero, nothing. And I was just at this point of desperation and fear where, you know, I took the suggestions this guy gave me just because, like, I didn't know what it meant. And so he was like, go to this meeting with this guy. He's a friend of mine. He goes to these meetings. He took me to Ninjas. And, you know, ask someone to be your sponsor. Just go into it. And I was like, all right, cool. So then I went to the meeting. I drank before the meeting. Which, by the way, everyone's allowed to do. I went to the meeting, was super confused. Didn't really know what was going on. And then after that, like, texted the guy who took me to the meeting, who's right there, and be my sponsor. And so that's how it started. So I have a sponsor. And he's been really great. He's right there, and he's got his face, hand in his face. But he's been extraordinarily helpful. He's been instrumental. And I didn't know any better, and I don't know what was up, but I just didn't. I think maybe that's what open-mindedness is, by the way. I didn't know what it was. I was like, I'm really open-minded because, like, gay people are cool or something. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm liberal, therefore I'm open-minded. Everyone deserves healthcare, therefore I'm open-minded or something. But, like, I don't think that's what open-mindedness is. I think open-mindedness is literally just being like, I don't know shit, and, like, I will basically, you know, take your fucking suggestion because I have no idea. And that's now the approach I try to take towards most things, you know. Like, I got hypnotized recently, and I was just like, oh. I wasn't, like, skeptical about it. I was like, you know, I was like, I'm going to try to see how it goes. And it was okay, you know. So, just saying, hypnotism's great. No, open-mindedness is something that I don't really know what it is still. So, I got sober January 8th last year. I was 24 at the time, now I'm 25. I got sober primarily going to midnight. And I love midnight, highly recommend it to everybody. Any meeting that you can go and shout about how much you hate fucking AA is a great meeting. And what's attracted me to this program is the honesty and the intimacy that you find in these rooms. It's literally like one of a kind. I don't even know any place that some complete stranger will talk about, you know, all the horrible things that they've done, all the horrible things that they will continue to do, and all the horrible things they're desperately trying not to continue to do. But that's what this place is, you know. It's incredible. I would say that I got sober originally because I was like, I'm going to be really productive. That was the idea. I had this idea that I would sleep 6 hours a day, go to a meeting for an hour, and like work 17 hours a day. I was like really committed to that. I thought it was going to be great. And turn around my business and all this shit. And it worked for like a week. I guess that's what I wasted my pink cloud somewhere. Some would call it that. But anyway, it did work for like a week. And then obviously I went back to like the normal person that I am, who actually has a hard time even waking up at all. So there you go. And I'm struggling with that now. My business, I'm shutting it down, which I have to credit the program with the fact that if this had happened before, I guarantee you that I would have at least thought about killing myself, because these are the reasons I created for myself to live. these are, like, I didn't fucking give a shit about fashion. That's the worst part. Like, it's not like I woke up one day. I woke up when I was, like, 11 years old and, like, sewed together some piece of clothing and was like, I must be a fashion designer. It was like, I was working at my dad's fashion company and I was like, I need to do something to create something to live for. So, you know what? I'll just be a fashion designer and I'll just, like, teach myself how to design fashion clothes and whatever and try to pretend like I give a shit. Like, I don't give a fuck. Everyone I like doesn't give a shit about what they wear, at least, and that's wonderful. So, you know, I do things I wasn't passionate about, and I thought all of them were a choice. I thought that I had my shit really together, because I thought I was doing whatever the fuck I wanted and killing it at it, even though I wasn't. And I thought that everyone else was, like, some sort of slave. Everyone who was, like, in finance or working at this other job or doing anything other than forcing their will on the world was, like, literally, you know, fucking some sort of slave, you know? And the one thing I'll tell you is that that is not the case. I think that very much before I got sober, nothing I did was really a choice. It was, in a lot of ways, a means of survival. It was, in a lot of ways, just some way to, like, not hate myself that day. And that's the biggest gift I got out of this program so far is, you know, everyone talks about freedom and all that crap. But you know, it is freedom. It's like I actually make decisions now and I have to live with them, you know? And that's the question I ask myself before I make a decision that's probably not correct. I'm like, can I live with this? And usually the answer is yes, you know. And this program is not about, like, always making the right decision. That's insane, by the way. And I tried it, and it doesn't work. And it's impossible to be perfect. And the best thing you can do is just do something unless you think you can't live with it. Like, killing somebody, don't do that. But if you can live with it, do it. Feel how shitty it feels and don't do it again, basically. You know, that's basically the program. It's like, do the things that you might not think work, or do the things that you think might work, and find out how wrong you are, find out how right you are, usually. And that's freedom, also. It's like, you get to evaluate, fuck, I'm so fucking afraid of all of you people, and be like, oh, I'll speak it legal anyway, you know, like that kind of thing. And that's what it is to me. It's all about that. And this program to me is all about courage, and that's something I don't really have on my own. I thought I did. I thought I didn't have any fear before, and I thought I didn't have any stress before. I really didn't. I was like, I'm some sort of fucking superhuman mastermind who doesn't feel stress or fear. But I was wrong, because it influenced every single decision I ever made. And as a result, everything I did was doomed to either fail or doomed for me to just get tired of it because it was too healthy. And yeah, so I do the steps. I'm working on my 9th step. I do my 10, 11, 12 or 10, 11 every day. And it's amazing. It's incredible. It's really uncomfortable. Almost everything in this program is really fucking uncomfortable. And what I would say is something I always have to talk about. I got a lot of addictions in sobriety, I would say. Maybe other people can relate, but things always come in to fill that void, always. This is my, like, 6th espresso today. Addictions. Oh yeah. So I had a big fantasy baseball addiction. I was doing, like, all these sabermetric analyses on my players in this league of people who didn't give a fuck at all. And I would do these crazy. I was getting really into sabermetrics. Let's leave it at that. And I would get so stressed out. I ended up shouting at the commissioner and all this shit. And then I switched over. I got a big food addiction. I got really addicted to Subway sandwiches in sobriety. I know it sounds absurd, but I really did. I would, like, go to fellowship and, like, get a burger and fries and cake because everyone was like, do whatever you want. It's your first year. And so I was like, I'm going to do it. And I would be super full, and I'd be, like, driving home, and I would it felt like drugs and alcohol. It was like, I'm full. I don't need or want food, but I have no choice but to go to Subway and get a fucking footlong sub and shit and eat it and still, like, be sick and still want to do it. What was amazing about that is it was fucked up. I asked someone in the program who had told me he had a cake batter addiction, and because he would, like, eat so much cake batter, and he didn't know what was up, and he was, like, had his girlfriend, like, stop making cake, because if she left the room in between putting the cake batter into the cake, he would eat all the cake batter. And so I was like, what do I do? You know, I've got this big Subway sandwich. It was like 11 p.m. on a Saturday. And he was like, why don't you, how's your fourth step going? And what's fucked up is it worked. Like, I did my fourth step and it went away. And I don't think it really is that easy. Like, I still overeat sometimes, obviously. But after that, I lost like 45 pounds. It's insane. And I don't understand it. But that seems to be the way this program works. It's like, you got a problem, you're going to obsess about fixing it, or you're going to do something else that has nothing to do with it, and maybe it'll get better. And usually it does. And that's actually, like, it's really a big part of how things will work for me. Basically, don't sit still and obsess. Try and do a thing, and things get better, usually. That's at least what's worked for me. Great things that have happened to me in sobriety. I have a relationship with my family now, which is incredible. I still think that I'm going to amount to nothing and still think I'll be alone forever, but now I laugh at that a little bit, which is something. The thing I do want to talk about, I have like 3 minutes left or something. Is that it? The thing I do want to talk about is dating in sobriety, because everyone does it. This is young people's meeting. I did it. I started dating someone in sobriety. I had this really great idea. I was like, I'm not going to break the suggestions. I found a girl. She was in Boston. She was super busy. I was like, there's no way I can turn this person into my higher power. And I did. And I totally did. And my point is, like, not don't date. My point is, like, you know, it was just the next thing after Subway. Let's leave it at that. You know? And it was like a vessel for all my fear and anxiety. And if only my 10 steps could be, like, you know, out there in the open, it would be amazing. So all I would say is, I don't know, I'm a big believer in the thing it says in the book. In the book, it doesn't say you shouldn't date in your first year. In the book, it says we are not the arbiters of anyone's sex life. And if you don't have problems with your sex life, then you can't be human. And I really believe that. But I will say that right now I'm in a place where having broken up with her, which is a new one, breaking up with someone rather than driving them to break up with me through sheer anger. I had a big anger problem, by the way. That's gotten a lot better in sobriety. You know, now I'm in this place where I have no idea what the fuck to do. And I read a chapter in the book and I'm thinking about this fucking girl. And I'm like, I'm spiritually fucking bankrupt again, you know? Like, the only spiritual things I do are like a little bit of step work and go to meetings. And now I'm in this place where I'm very much working on that higher power thing. Because most of my higher power experiences happened through her, happened through weird shit that happened that I was like, oh, everything's gonna be okay. I don't even want to go into it, but you know, I don't have anything to say. I have no commandment to give anyone about anything other than the fact that this program's really worked for me, and if it wasn't for it, I probably would either be dead or something close. But the last thing I'll leave you with is this quote that I think about tattooing on myself whenever I have nothing else to obsess about. I obsess about getting a tattoo. And it's this quote from this Murakami book, short story, which is, I no longer wake up screaming in the middle of the night. And I am trying now to start life all over again. No, I know it's probably too late to start again. I may not have much time left to live, but even if it comes too late, I am grateful that, in the end, I was able to attain a kind of salvation. I could have come to the end of my life unsaved, still screaming in the dark, afraid. And oh, the fear is there, all right. It comes to us in many different forms at different times and overwhelms us. But the most frightening thing we can do at such times as to turn our backs on it, to close our eyes, for then we take the most precious thing inside us and surrender it to something else. And I think that has been the biggest part of this program for me, is that I was a high bottom sobriety person, and the worst thing that could have happened is I lived and continued to live in the constant fear and self-hatred that I did, and wake up every day crying and wanting to die. And now I don't. And that's amazing. And all the fear in my life is still there. In fact, I now at least know it's there. And I have an entire room of all of you and all of you people who helped me get sober, who helped me get to this point in my life, that give me the courage to even face it and not surrender the most powerful thing in my life to something else. So thank you.
Contributions to AA's service bodies. Madam or Mr. Treasurer, have you met our expenses this evening?
No, we have not. We're $61 short.
I need to bring the basket. Okay.
If you can't give, don't worry. We need you more than we need the money. Is there anyone here for the first time or visiting from out of town who would like to say hello?
Welcome. 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 Welcome.